Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're back for part two of the episode on the defense. And joining me again is Sam Njoku. Sam, how are you doing?
Feeling pretty good. All things considered, I know the Ravens got handed to them a tough loss against the Steelers, but I'm feeling the optimism in the air with four games left. So feeling pretty good.
You know, there's a catharsis that goes on, I think, anytime I watch film and really break it down. I see some good things. I certainly see some bad things. You hope for the transient things. We talked about some of the things in the first episode. One of the non-transient things I was decidedly worried about was the Keaton Mitchell injury, that might have been more serious. I thought, I don't even know what the Ravens would do for a third running back if they didn't have Keaton Mitchell. They might be faced with that decision coming up this very week in terms of what they do. They may be forced to go out and try out some new players. But that was one thing that probably above a lot of the individual plays bothered me. We talked a little bit about the officiating. We're going to try and avoid that. Obviously, Sam and I both agree that the biggest two officiating problems were not the likely catch. It was the Jones penalty and the non-interception call in some order, whether you think those were 1-2 or 2-1, but we gave our objections to it. I think we're going to try to go the entire second episode without redoing that.
I'm going to try my best to not talk about it, but it is going to be very difficult because, you know, all things considered, I know the defense didn't, you know, do a superb job of getting to Aaron Rodgers, which is what we talked about a little bit on the last episode, but man, it's tough to not talk about it when it's just one of those officiating mistakes go the Ravens' way. The Ravens may be coming out with winners in this one.
Yeah. They did stop the run well. They played an enormous set of defensive linemen, and they basically accomplished the mission in terms of stopping the run. I wouldn't say they made the Steelers one-dimensional, but the Steelers were very good at not turning the ball over, and they're very good at not taking sacks, not taking the negative plays on the one end of the barbell. But they also got the positive plays on the other end of the bottle. They got the explosives. Without them, their offense wasn't much. That was 67% of their passing yards on their big five plays. We talked about that in the first episode. I think if you make another team one-dimensional in that way, you generally will win that game because they won't be as successful throwing the ball deep as Rodgers was in this game.
Absolutely. And I think, again, as you mentioned, take away those five plays. Take away three of those five plays, and the Ravens have a great chance of winning this ball game. And I think it's unfortunate that it went down like that, especially considering so much of the playoff implications for this week were tied down to whether or not the Ravens were going to get the job done. But fortunately, it seems as though they're going to have to fight a little harder to get the division title for the third straight year.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit about the defense here individually, if you don't mind. And I do want to focus in on a guy like Mike Green, who I think Ravens fans have been waiting to see him mature. It hasn't flashed as much as you would think, but it's very difficult, in my opinion, for a rookie pass rusher to come out strong, you know, sacking the quarterback 15 times. I think it takes a little bit to get into the groove of being a National Football League player. But I think overall, Mike Green has shown me enough where he could potentially be that guy in the future. But I think that right now, especially with the loss of Tavius Robinson, they're putting him in situations where they didn't necessarily think they'd have to, especially in his first year as a Raven.
Yeah, I could completely agree. I mean, I thought from the expectation series, I thought he'd be a situational pass rusher this year. I thought that he would be a guy that, you know, Tavius Robinson would be an early down guy. He'd be a late down guy. There would be other sharing of the snaps that would occur between Van Noy and others on the other side, maybe Ajabo on early downs. And that hasn't occurred. They've leaned on Green for the most snaps of any outside linebacker. They've turned Van Noy into a situational pass rusher. But Green, you know, has shown additional maturity in a lot of ways these last few weeks. One of them is, I think he's really letting it rip in terms of his twitchiness, that he's really trying to lean into that. He's leaned into his motor at a higher level, I think, too, at times, particularly the Minnesota game, the finishing play. He continued to rush the passer for 10 full seconds before he finally delivered the quarterback hit on McCarthy as he threw the incompletion that ended the game. I just seen more of that. I think what I'm also liking is that He took on an opponent this week, Andres Pete, who for a lot of reasons is not the guy a contending team wants to have at left tackle. He's not the Steelers' first choice, and the Steelers didn't have any good choices to start with. They had Broderick Jones at left tackle, and then they had Andres Pete at left tackle, who also got hurt this game. I think actually he might have been one of the concussion guys as well.
Yeah.
But he left the field and had to be replaced by Dylan somebody. And so I know he introduced himself to the other linemen because he's playing his first NFL snaps in that game. So it'd be a lot like Carson Vinson getting his first NFL snaps against the Steelers and Highsmith, say, in replacing Stanley. So you think about how much of a leap that would be. It was strange. But I would also say that Green, when he faced Andres Pete, he used the fact that he's a little bit smaller than him, and he's 6'4". He's not a small human being, but Pete is 6'7". And he used his ability to kind of dip under his left arm and forced a hold out of Pete on one of the plays. He was way too quick for him. I mean, Pete's a guard playing left tackle, but that was interesting that he was able to actually use his relative size to a disadvantage. Something we've seen in the Ravens Steelers rivalry a lot when you had Ronnie Stanley or others that were up against James Harrison.
Yeah.
You had a big size differential, but James Harrison, really knew how to take advantage of being small.
James Harrison was always very annoying back in the day. I know some of your listeners may be a little younger, but for me anyway, it just feels like, man, James Harrison was a problem. And hopefully Mike Green, I mean, that's a comparison, Ken, that I would love to see. Mike Green being a guy that can get to the passer consistently, it's a dream that may come true sooner than Ravens fans think. And I don't want them to think that just because he hasn't had the sacks or the numbers of the pressures that he isn't going to mature. I think this is going to be, bad experience, because as a Ravens fan, if Mike Green's out there for this many snaps, it means that you got some injuries and some non-productive pass rushers. But all of these reps are going to be good for him in the future. So hopefully that's a positive sign for Ravens fans.
It's a trial by fire. We've had the debate on this show a number of times, whether it's really good or not, or whether he could be building his pass rush bag a little better if that was his primary responsibility. But he certainly, any future run defense that he's roped into, he'll be in a better position to do because of this trial by fire.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
All right. I'll go with one. Let's talk about Travis Jones. Thought he had another solid game, had one pressure on a stunt. He had a late pursuit as well that I tracked where he was somebody who chased Rodgers, I believe, towards the right sideline as he threw out of the back of the end zone on a play. His only tackle was a defensive win. But I think his primary game now is he's now the Ravens' best three-tech alternative. He's the guy mm-hmm. that they really want to have in there as a pass rusher on early downs, or really on anything but an obvious passing down. And the problem is not that he's not good when he's in there. He's fantastic. The problem is that they can't have him in there every snap and play the position rotationally and have him be still ready to go. So they used him in every single dime package. For example, he's always on the field on obvious passing downs, which means you've got to limit the early down usage of him. And they are still leaning on him very heavily this year. Extremely stout, helped Roquan have a big game in this. The penalty I thought was complete garbage, but we went over that in the first episode. We won't retalk about it.
Yeah. I mean, Travis Jones is the very interesting situation for Travis Jones is I was hoping that this would be a year where he gets some help, so he's not double team and triple team all the time. Now we're in a situation where we can't even have him in on first and second down because the fear of tiring him out during these passing situations is very real. So, I think Travis Jones is still a heck of a lineman. I'm going to be very interested to see what the Ravens do in the offseason with him. Don't want to think about it because I think there's going to be some changes on the way with the trenches, and hopefully he's not a casualty because he's going to be – I mean, the numbers aren't there. I know he had a pressure and a pursuit, but he's going to be a hot commodity during this offseason. So the Ravens better put the best foot forward and keep him if that's their wish.
He's pretty much on everybody's list who needs defensive linemen. That's a lot of the National Football League is short on defensive linemen. Believe me, if the Ravens don't have him, they'll be very short on defensive linemen. So I think, he's the number one priority right now among the UFAs. Are you in the same spot?
Agreed, 1,000%.
Ahead of Lindenbaum, ahead of Likely.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Ahead of all those guys, no doubt. Okay.
I talked about that this camp, by the way, Ryan Mink calling you out about this. that you know, he thought it was the hottest take imaginable that Travis Jones was a more important guy to re-sign than Linderbaum.
Did Ryan Mink hear about that?
Ryan Mink said it to me.
Oh, he did? He came to me and
Ryan
said
Mink's, yes, he asked me who's the most important one to re-sign among Likely and Linderbaum and Jones. And Oway, I guess, was at that point was under consideration. But I said, no, it's Travis Jones by a mile over Linderbaum. It's an unfortunate situation. It's not that Tyler Linderbaum is a bad player. He's a pretty good center who wants, above average center who you're going to pay the very top of the market. And that just, I want him at some price, but I don't want him at that price.
Exactly.
In Travis Jones' case, I mean, I'm not sure what the right price is, but the Ravens ought to be willing to pay it. I hope.
1,000%. There should be no question among Ravens fans, among anyone, front office personnel, whoever's in charge of it. Travis Jones, an interior pass rusher, is just a hot commodity that not many teams have. Linderbaum, again, he's a great center. I mean, but you're going to have to overpay for his services. And are you more than likely going to get a serviceable center during the draft, or maybe even Bullock can be that guy? Or you're going to be willing to lose an interior pass rusher when you don't even know the status of your other interior pass rusher and Nani Madubuike? It just doesn't make much sense. It didn't make sense before. Certainly doesn't make much sense now.
You probably saw the young lady, in theory, who came out on Reddit and had comments made and claimed that Madubuike is already retired, right?
Yeah, I did see that. I've been circling my sources to find out if that's 100% accurate or not. I haven't heard anything to that effect. I have not heard one way or another what's going on in Madubuike. I've talked to people who should know that don't know. I've talked to people who shouldn't know that have something to say about it. So I think it's really up to Madubuike to come out and state what his plans are. But I know I did see him in Texas. I did see him in Texas last weekend. So part of that story is for sure true, but I think Madubuike still has some decisions to make about whether or not he's coming back.
Okay, let's dig a little deeper. You saw him personally in Texas, or you saw him, somebody had a picture of him in Texas?
I saw him on television in Texas. Sorry, let's get clarification. He was at a football game, and he was in Texas for that game. So
Texas, he was at a Texas A&M game because that's where he went to school. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. And that he could do that even if he was in Baltimore. He could still be going to that game.
Correct.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, let's go with another guy. I've been very interesting to talk about Marlon Humphrey, as a lot of Ravens fans aren't very fond of his podcasting and our podcast. So I like to listen in on other Ravens content creators, and Humphrey's one of them. He was, I think he gets a lot of criticism here. He's an inside corner, and when you find him on the outside, I don't want to say he's out of position, but he is more than likely going to be in a situation where he's not 1,000% comfortable in my opinion. But overall, I think he did well. Besides that big play to DK Metcalf, I didn't see anything that was totally outlandish from Marlon Humphrey in that contest. So I think Marlon Humphrey played a decent game overall.
So all the corners got beat once. So start with that. And then Starks got beat badly on one play. Gilman did not really get beat on a play that I saw. And Hamilton did not get really badly beaten on a play. But Humphrey, even with the 52-yard play on the very first play of the game, he's targeted 13 times of the game, only gave up 92 yards. So that's 7.1 yards per play. That's fine. It's not great, but it's you know, solid. He had contributions to 5 drive-ending plays. And that is really the big number out of Marlon Humphrey's game in there. Now, one of those happened to get the drive got restarted after Jones had the penalty, but he got the Steelers into a kicking situation on fourth down on one of those plays. He did miss 2 tackles during the game. This is one of the things about PFF that will occasionally show up. The 2 missed tackles cost the Ravens 10 yards. Now, could have been more sure, but there's other missed tackles that honestly sometimes are better than no contact at all, which where you retrack a running back or whatnot, or turn somebody around in the backfield, but you miss the tackle anyway. It's certainly better than no contact or no pressure on the quarterback. And in this case, he missed a couple of tackles on the outside that ended up costing the Ravens 10 yards. But those 5 drive-ending plays, they are extraordinary leverage involved in those plays. And the one I really loved, the one play I really loved, was at the end of the game on the Pittsburgh's last offensive play. They had the 3rd and 7, and they ran a little rub route to try and get Humphrey off of Marquez Valdes-Scantling, MVS. And Humphrey did not bite on it, and he let Metcalf. They tried to rub him with Metcalf, and he jumped underneath, and he got him in MVS's hands, and the ball went incomplete. And that was a really fine play by Marlon. I look at this game and I see there's a lot he still has to offer. Yeah, he got beaten to the spot by Metcalf on that very first play of the game, which was not good, but the ball was also placed in such a way that I don't think many corners would have been able to do anything, particularly with who that ball was thrown to. Yeah. I think that was going to be caught.
It's DK Metcalf. I mean, one thing that DK Metcalf can do is run straight and catch footballs when thrown accurately. I mean, it is what it is in that regard. Is Marlon Humphrey faster than DK Metcalf? No. I think it was a single high look. So I think Alohi Gilman
was single high.
Yeah, so Alohi Gilman got there a little late. I'm not sure. Again, because the pass was a timing pass, I'm not sure if Alohi Gilman should even be assuming responsibility for that. It was just a great play.
Oh, no. No, when he's single high and it's outside the numbers, you, the very first rule is Rodgers put the ball there on a timing route because the safety could not get to it. That's the that's the whole point. So it's Metcalf or he's trying also for a DPI call on the play from Humphrey if he runs through him. But he had a couple different ways to win that. Just, you know, drop the ball right in the bucket. What are you going to do against a 6'4 receiver? So, yeah.
Exactly. Agreed.
All right. Let's go on and talk about Hamilton. Now, Hamilton was kind of a forgotten man in this game, but there's a reason for that. The entire game, Rodgers was really trying to avoid him. He actually had a very fine game of taking away the strong side of the field, despite only three tackles. The only pass they threw to even his side was basically one where they had a screen set up to the running back. They had Hamilton blocked, and Hamilton still pushed his blocker. And I forget what this, Jonnu Smith. Yeah, Jonnu Smith on that play, that he stood up, pushed him backwards towards the play, which actually kind of forced, I forget if it was Warren or Gainwell on the play, towards the sideline where that tackle was made for a gain of only four. So it was a screen pass for minus eight plus 12. On the play for only a 4 yard gain. That's the only time they threw at Hamilton the entire game. And it's just kind of indicative of what he does to you. It's where they didn't throw. It's a lot of the old Ed Reed effect of they didn't throw anywhere near him. It's a fine 14 on every play kind of situation.
Yep. And you know, Kyle Hamilton, he's going to flash on the screen when he's blitzing, but obviously the Ravens decided not to blitz as often, especially with him in this contest. So I think that it's a good thing. You want to see more of that from Kyle Hamilton. Sometimes taking away one side of the field, it isn't going to show up in the stats. It's not going to show up on the stat sheet at all, but he was very effective in this contest. Aaron Rodgers avoided him at all costs, and it worked out to the Steelers' favor. So I'm sure if given the opportunity, a lot of opposing offenses will do the same.
PFF shows him as rushing the passer twice the entire game. Yep. He did not blitz during the game. He did not blitz from off ball, as I called it. So he must have showed himself at the line of scrimmage and gone. I wouldn't doubt that that's the case. That's nothing for him for a game. I mean, he would normally four, six times he might rush the passer.
Yep. I agree. All right. Let's take a look at my good buddy, Roquan Smith, the guy who gets a lot of criticism from Ravens fans sometimes because, you know, they pay him this big contract. They expect him to be Ray Lewis. I'm not sure, you know, anybody can be Ray Lewis, especially big shoes to fill, of course, for him. But I think he had a good game. I think part of that, again, is because the Ravens went so big in the line with those nose tackles. And I think it gave him a lot of opportunity to get success getting after the running back. And I think it's something very similar to what Ray Lewis is asking of Ozzie Newsome and Rex Ryan at the time. I remember very vividly that Ray Lewis was asking for a guy like a Haloti Ngata to come in and be that guy in the middle to help him out in the defense. I think that's what the Ravens did in this contest to help stop the run. I think Roquan Smith played a big factor in that.
Just to go back to 2002 for a moment. Yeah. So the Ravens, after 2001, of course, they had a big purge, but they also switched from a 4-3 defense in 2000, 2001. They had a 4-3 for several years before that as well, but not every year because actually the Ravens first year, they had to switch from a 4-3 to a 3-4 in season because of injuries. They didn't have a choice, but anyway, 2000, 2001, the great defenses we remember from that era were both 4-3 units. And you know, you had two outside linebackers. You had a good chance to keep Ray Lewis clean with a couple of really big guys in the on the middle of that line. Not that McCrary and Burnett were small, Burnett in particular, but they did a good job of keeping him clean, letting him roam the field and make tackles, and let Ray Lewis be the playmaker that he was kind of meant to be. And the Ravens went to a 3-4, and Ray Lewis was publicly not happy about it. I would say so. This is a game where Roquan, you know, has consistently two nose tackles on every run play that are in front of him. On a lot of plays, he also had Brent Urban, whether it was in an uncovered look or whether it was in a base look. So they had a lot of big linemen in front of him, and he roamed around. He made 10 tackle contributions in this game. 8 of those were defensive wins. Astounding total and percentage for one game. He had his hand in 2 drive ending plays at the end. By the way, somebody's got to make the tackle, even if it's 3rd and 11 or 3rd and 19. Somebody's got to make the tackle. Yeah. And that's something that Roquan Smith and Hamilton and others who were containing those plays did a good job of. And Smith, anyway, fine game for him, and wasn't bad in coverage either. But I thought he was very positive on his play. And, you know, the other thing that you mentioned earlier was about, you know, what do you really need to get out of Roquan Smith with the contract he has? And the first thing I say is, if you expect him to be the very best player on your team, or the second best player on your team because he makes the second most money, and I don't even know if that's true. Just might be somebody else who's making more, like Humphrey. I'm not really sure he's number two on the team. But if he was, and you expect him to be the second best player on the team, it might not be reasonable. If he's the highest paid inside linebacker, it's still not reasonable to think he would definitely be the best inside linebacker in the game. But you want a guy who's top 5, top 7, is consistently competing for postseason honors at his position. I think that's what the Ravens have with Roquan. I think there's some question as to whether he was there last year. I don't think there's any question this year that he's one hell of an inside linebacker. And he's had a couple of great games that would certainly go in the right column for that.
100%. I'm a big Roquan Smith advocate. Again, last year, you can make a case they maybe fell off a little bit. This year, I think he's been on the mission. It hasn't been as vocal. Of course, not much to be vocal about with the Ravens' mm-hmm. record right now. But I think that overall, he's had a really good season. And I think the Ravens are better with him than without him.
Absolutely. So you picked Roquan.
Yep.
The guy who hasn't been as much in the spotlight recently is Buchanan. I know a lot of people think a lot about him, and then he'll make a play occasionally, and you'll see that. He only made 2 tackles in this game. That's moderately frustrating to me, that a guy put in an advantageous position like this. And remember, he only plays first and second down, so he's in for a lot of those run plays, and they're running 16 times for 35 yards, excluding the kneel. Then he should have a good chance to make some of those plays. Maybe Roquan took them all away from him. I don't really believe that's the case. Buchanan only had 2 tackles in the game. One of those was the play that should have been interception. So it was really nice to see him making an aggressive play on the football. Didn't really have an impact as a pass rusher. Obviously nobody did. But this is a game where I would hope, with the Steelers being who they are, that he would have had a bigger impact on the football game. And I think let me put it this way. I'm certainly not ready to give him the job as the Mike linebacker next year. I think the Ravens will probably end up having to go ahead and pay the $7 million for Smith. By the way, $32 million of cap money or whatever it is next year, that doesn't mean a damn thing. That money's already spent, except for the last $7.3 million. That's the part that the Ravens can decide not to spend. So if they're going to get somebody else to play inside linebacker, and they're going to need to try and think about, can I get somebody as good for $7.3 million? And I don't think there's anybody they can do. Now, they might get somebody who's 80% as good for $1 million. That's possible. But I don't think there's anybody who's as good for $7.3
million. Yeah, not at all. I think Roquan Smith stays another. I've had a lot of fans come to me and say, hey, what do you think about Roquan Smith getting, you know, released, save some cap space and get him going? No, I don't see it. Teddy Buchanan, yeah, I'm not sure if he's the answer there. He has 4 weeks to prove himself, but I think the Ravens would be foolish to take the route they took with the offensive line and not put bodies there that could potentially be effective camp, you know, battles for him next year. I think he comes back next year, obviously, maybe a year under his belt. Maybe he gets a little bigger. His size has been an issue, but I think that they'll need to take a look at that position for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a lot of growing up at the position. He's still a dude to figure out what's going on behind him between level two and three. That's something that Roquan, I think that came more naturally to him. I know a lot of people have problems with how he covered. Those same people had a lot of problems with how CJ Mosley covered. And they didn't understand that the guy who could cover 10% better than the guy next to him is the guy who's going to get all the coverage snaps, generally speaking, for the inside linebacker. The other guy, if he's Patrick Queen, he's going to blitz. If he's Teddy Buchanan, he's going to be used as a blitzer or maybe, you know, on downhill assignments primarily. If you're Roquan Smith, you got to know how to drag a seam. You got to know how to do some of the things that inside linebackers have to do, that they're more tough coverage assignments. And he's been pretty good at that. I think people underrate him tremendously as a coverage linebacker.
They do, but you know, it is what it is. You gotta just, if you're Roquan Smith, just take it how you can and just understand that, you know, the casual fan may not know about it.
So $7.3 million to cut Roquan this next year. I don't think the Ravens do it. I think you're in the same spot, right?
100% in the same spot.
2027, they cut him. There's a $20 million savings. I don't see how he survives that at present.
No shot. He survives that. That's a huge amount of savings. He, at that position as well, which isn't a premium, there's no way they keep him for that.
So they could, I guess he'll be, what, 29 years old or something at the time. Maybe he'll be 30. But they could, I guess, re-sign him to a different deal at that point. That might be a possibility, but it'll be largely dependent on his 2026 performance, and that's what he'll be playing for next year. But at this point, I think he's played too well for the Ravens not to keep him for the $7 million. Honestly, Marlon Humphrey, it's basically the exact same contract situation, a $7.3 million savings if they cut Humphrey next year. The Ravens have significant corner.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Back depth shortages. They got nothing in terms of their two young draft picks this year. How about him? Is he going to be around?
I don't think so. Maybe that's a hot take. I don't know how he survives this year just because they put so much money into the secondary. And I think they'll need, I know there's a lot of caps, you know, space that the Ravens have next year. I think they need as much they can get to really fortify these trenches on both the offensive and defensive end. That, you know, I don't know if he might be the odd man out in that regard. If they do keep him, then he's also in a position with Roquan where he'd certainly be gone the following year unless he makes maybe a transition to safety. What are your thoughts about that, Marlon Humphrey?
Yeah, transition to safety I think makes a lot of sense. You could also look at it as this way. If they're going to sign Alohi Gilman, I don't know what he'll cost, but let's say he costs $4 million or $5 million a year, but you have to make a multi-year commitment to him to get that. So maybe you have to make $15 million. You're really paying him like 1 year for $8 million if you want to cut him after that. It'd be something like that. That would be the order of magnitude. Maybe it's 1 year for $6 million. I'd rather have Marlon Humphrey at safety than Alohi Gilman every day and twice on Sunday.
Yeah, so, I don't think Alohi Gilman comes back, in my opinion. I think the move to safety would benefit Marlon. I'm not sure how receptive he is to that, but I would get pretty receptive to it pretty fast if I was him.
Yeah, I've actually asked him the question before at camp, and he said, the question I asked him was, have the conversations occurred between you and the coaches about the possibility of moving to safety at some point in the future? And he said, no, they hadn't happened, but he always saw himself moving to safety at some point. Chris McAllister said the same thing, by the way.
Yeah.
years ago that you know, he said, I've got 8 years still in this league, 4 more at corner and 4 more at safety. And I think he's gone like after 1 more year with the Ravens after that. But in Humphrey's case, I think there's some long-term viability. He's a great off-ball coverage guy, which that skill is very portable to safety. So I would think he would, you know, a lot of that's looking back into the backfield, reading the quarterback. The guys who are the great cover three guys, they often are guys who can move to safety, but maybe a lot of them don't have the frame for it. Not the problem with Humphrey. Humphrey's big enough to play the position. As long as you're willing to use him as a free safety, I think, or even a split field guy, he's a guy who can really help you.
I think he could. Let's hope that they do something like that, because I think that's the move for him, honestly, after this season. Maybe one more year at corner, but I think safety really will be a good position for him to transition to.
It also might be the case where he comes back and initially you talk about moving to safety and then you have so many injuries at cornerback, he ends up back there. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Zero chance it would surprise me.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. All right. Well,
who's up now?
I want to talk about my favorite player on this defense, somebody that I'm not sure a lot of Ravens fans agree with, but you really should, in my opinion. I think Nate Wiggins has quickly become my favorite player on this defense, outside of Kyle Hamilton, of course. And that's primarily because his toughness. I think him coming out of college, the knock on him was his frame, whether or not he'd be physical enough to play in this league. And he's been nothing but physical to me. He's had a decent game. He's a great coverage corner, especially for his second year. I think he played predominantly well. He did get beaten that one play. Every corner did in that contest. But I think against the Steelers, he did pretty good. And the fact that he came back from injury, I thought he'd be out for a couple of weeks. He came back the next week. That shows toughness. I like Nate Wiggins a lot, and I think he played well in this game, and I look forward to him performing well in the future. And he's one of the reasons why I could see the Ravens potentially moving Marlon Humphrey to safety or moving on from him entirely because of the confidence they have for him at corner. But again, depth is an issue for this team as well.
You can always get somebody to believe anything that is written on the internet just because it's in the interest of their narrative.
Yeah.
And one of the things about this team that I've really loved is I don't think they've quit on each other. I don't think they've quit on Harbaugh. I think they still want to play hard. I think, you know, there have been opportunities for people to basically sit on the sideline. Wiggins would have been one of them. Love the fact that he's a competitor. It probably has something to do with what characteristics they looked for when they drafted him originally. But I think it probably also has something to do with, you know, what he's become being around other players on the Ravens and the Ravens coaches. I think it's a, you know, very positive thing to see. But he had a good game. 5 targets for 43 yards is not great overall, but did allow the one play to Metcalf at the beginning of the second half down the right sideline. Beginning of the first half, beginning of the second half were both long plays. That really sucked. Very first play of each half. 52 and 28 yards. So he played generally well otherwise, and he frankly played a lot better than I could have hoped, given the fact that he left that last game with an injury. And he's been one hell of a cornerback this year for the Ravens.
Great, great, great draft by Eric DaCosta. He's been getting some criticism, EDC has, but I'm not giving up on EDC yet. This is another reason why you guys should kind of pump the brakes on that criticism. He deserves a little bit, but overall, I think he's great at evaluating talent and getting some good guys, great guys on the football field for the Ravens.
I'm moderately happy with where Starks is so far. For a first year guy and a free safety, I think there've been some positive developments. It's more about the trend of his play that I'm happier with than the actual average level of it so far this season. Cause I thought he had a lot of tough games early on. He's in position to make an interception against Buffalo. Didn't do it. Then he had two interceptions, 2 games in a row. I thought I was seeing some solid loose bracket play. I think he had a big miscue in this game that ended up costing the Ravens a 41-yard play, but that's going to happen from time to time. Generally speaking, I think, you know, much more often than not, he's in the right place. You'd certainly hope it's much more often than not. Let me say rarely is he in the wrong place. Let me say that. This happened to me one of these times in this game where it didn't go well. He's missed a couple tackles, but generally speaking, I think he's been pretty good there. I still think Emin Mori was the bigger pick. And if you didn't see what he did this week, you probably can look that up for yourself. Starks came to the NFL with a lot of polish. He was already a guy who knew how to play the position, and he's a good athlete, but not the absolute elite athlete that Emin Mori is. Emin Mori is the Bo Jackson of the position. And so, you know, we'll see how that works out. Emmanuel didn't know the first thing about playing safety, that's for sure, in his last year in the SEC, and he still was extremely effective. So we'll see with between these two, because it'll always be a question, I think, that'll come up. And it's incredible. The national pundits were so uniformly positive on Starks over him, but it is what it is. And, you know, all I can say is I'm thrilled to have him on the team. And I'm thrilled that they got Green and Starks in the first two rounds. I think that was extremely positive in terms of relative to the amount of draft capital they were working with. But he's still in the development stage late in year one. Kyle Hamilton was not still in the development stage late in year one. He was already one of the best safeties in the entire game. He was in the development stage early in year one, but late in year one, he was not.
So. Yeah. Kyle Hamilton was a bona fide stud coming out of Notre Dame. He was my number one player. And the fact that he fell to 14 is something that
incredible.
I think the league will regret the 31 teams for a very long time. But I remember very specifically during the draft, and I was at their live stream for the draft, you were extremely high on Nick Emmanuel as opposed to Malachi Starks. And I got to say, Emmanuel has looked very good in Seattle. And to your point, the Bo Jackson of that position group is not a far off comparison, because athletically speaking, he is phenomenal. And so just having someone to coach him up and get him prepared to be an NFL safety is all it really takes. And we're starting to see flashes of that here. So yeah, to your point, Malachi Starks has the polish and it'll be interesting.
This is a narrative building thing again. I'm not blaming you for this, by the way, but you just mentioned the coaching, and I saw out there on Twitter today, somebody said, it's not a fair comparison. He has a coach that's going to help him be all that he can be in Mike McDonald. And it becomes a knock on Harbaugh somehow that Emmanuel might have performed better than Starks so far. It's actually probably pretty close in truth. Emmanuel's played a lot less in total than Starks has. So there's evidence that Emmanuel is going to be a very good player. But the fact that anybody could twist that into a knock on John Harbaugh is just hilarious. But it becomes this, if we hadn't given up on Mike McDonald, then Emmanuel might have been the right pick, because we could make him into anything you wanted. We could make him into Mount Rushmore. He's that sort of clay, you know. And
I think if Nick Emmanuel was here, he'd still have that success, because I think he's just a phenomenal player. Was it just the fact of the matter that, you know, the Ravens decided to go the Malachi Starks direction, which isn't a bad pick. Again, as you mentioned,
it's
still a good pick, but boy, Nick Emmanuel Warriors is showing stuff.
I can just say, I can completely see hearing him talk at the podium. It's hard not to believe in the guy, because he's got a siren song in terms of a eloquence about him, an ability to explain things, just how he visualizes the game and how he can explain to you that he visualizes the game. It's at another level, and to hear this from a rookie is really outstanding. It's just, that's very indicative of the amount of polish he came out of school with. He was extraordinarily polished, and I look at that particularly in a pass rush as being something, a pass rusher, but also in a safety as something that's extremely dangerous. That you know, you have somebody who's instinctively at such a high level that he might not have a whole lot of ceiling left to grow into. Hopefully, I'm wrong about Malachi Starks, and he's not just a second round draft pick in a first round Chiefs clothing kind of thing. But he's really a first round talent.
Agreed. Who do we have left to talk about here? We talked about a lot. How about Kavanoy?
Sure.
He's a guy who I think really, I would say, is a little bit getting knocked down because of the loss of Tavius Robinson and Odafe Owe in some aspects. I think they have made him up to a pass rush specialist. Hasn't shown much. He has fallen off a little bit, but I think they may be asking him to do a little bit more, at least in the past, maybe not in this game, but in the past than in previous years. But there's no doubt about it. He has fallen off a little bit. That is the age thing. We didn't expect him to be this great 2 years ago, and now it looks like he's starting to slow down a little bit. So not the best game from him. Wasn't able to get to the passer, but I see why the Ravens were high on him. But might be time to go, Kyle, unfortunately.
I don't think he'll be in Baltimore next year, but he had one of the really great pass rush moves on the very first play of the game. He stunted I forget if it's a left tackle, left guard, whoever it was, he stunted and got pressure on Rodgers, but it didn't matter. Rodgers threw right over the defense for 52-yard play to Metcalf. And just, you know, best laid plans and whatnot. It was a good pass rush move. It was unfortunate. Didn't work out in that particular case. Draymond Jones is, as far as I'm concerned, can be the last guy we talk about, but he's playing more rundowns. He kicks inside on passing downs. He's kind of playing that Tavius Robinson role right now. When Tavius comes back, it'll be interesting to see how they divide out snaps. I do imagine that Tavius will be playing almost all of the early downs, and they might have some options on later downs to try something with four outside linebackers on the field. And I would love it if they would give that a shot. I think it would potentially be exciting to go to what I would call a race car package at the end of this year. Travis Jones is probably going to be too good to take off the field to really use that. But at least they'll have an option to use either Draymond or Tavius inside. They'll have other options for using three of their four outside linebackers on third down.
What a situation would you think that would be effective?
Okay, well, I'll tell you, the 2019 Ravens played a ton of race car. They played 13.2% race car on the season and only 10.3% base defense. Think about that for a moment.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. So it's what the perfect situation for playing race car is positive game script. So if you're ahead in the game by two scores in the fourth quarter, you let the dogs hunt. You put four across. You show them no down ability. You make it very difficult for their linemen to get their blocking assignments right. And you just continue to come after it. And the Rams game, for instance, they won that game 45-6. They were in race car a huge percentage of the snaps in the second half of that game. So that's the kind of game where you're trying to close out another game where the other teams try to come back by passing the football. You could have a dime defense, Roquan Smith, and a race car package, and you got something really special there.
That's awesome. Well, let's hope the Ravens are ahead in games for them to utilize that.
We keep talking about it. It doesn't happen. All right. Why don't we call it there in terms of going? We've got a couple of mailbag questions I want to go through, and we'll get to that. I am not sure how to pronounce this man's young mage name. He's from Berlin, and I'm going to call him Gua or Gua, perhaps Shalou. Anyway, that may be just his Twitter handle for all I know, but that may be his real name. He said the following: are there players who were realistic to be cut prior to season end that might be worth acquiring for a playoff push? And we might be a week too late on this question at this point.
A little bit.
But what do you think about that? You're thinking across the league. Is there a position group that you think, boy, it'd be good if the Ravens had one more of those, offensively or defensively?
I would love another offensive line. Can't that wouldn't hurt. I think that's the easy answer, but I'm not sure there's going to be anyone worth acquiring that's cut that the Ravens are going to plug in at offensive line. I think a lot of Ravens fans who think that, oh, just put anybody at right guard. Daniel Faalele is the worst guard in the league, and that's not the case. There's no team has given up a starter worthy guard at this point in the season. So I think that, you know, it would have to be an interior lineman, somebody like a Calais Campbell. Do y'all see Calais Campbell getting cut? Probably not. But if something like that were to happen, I could see the Ravens potentially going ahead and doing something like that. The Ravens have got to find a way to rush the pass. If they can't do it from the edge rushes, then interior rushing can help them out a great deal. So something like that, I think, would be beneficial.
Now, Campbell's been around the whole league the last couple of years, but I think last year he was in Miami, the year before that in Atlanta, and then the year before that in Baltimore, if I recall correctly. So
yeah, right.
Baltimore, Atlanta, Miami, and then to Arizona. I think the point of this was he went back to Arizona so he could finish his career in the place where he started. I think he actually wants to do that rather than take a chance on a team, especially a team like the Ravens. Now, if the New England Patriots were in a position where they wanted another down lineman, and then, you know, they're looking at the possibility of getting the one seed or whatever, or the Denver Broncos came calling, then I think he'd do it. Yeah. But I don't think he'd do it for a 6-7 team, even though it's a team he's got history with and he's probably got good times here, to remember. I don't think he'd come for that, but he would be pretty much the ideal player. You know, the Ravens, it's not because they want to that they've got four nose tackles active for a game. They'd much rather have, you know, some sort of athletic, dominating potential interior three tech player. That's exactly what Campbell gives you. whether it's coming from the three, the five, the edge, whatever it is, he could do a lot for you. And I think he'd be a great player, even his age. He's still racking up sacks, even now.
Still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Great player. And I'd be excited to have him back. But great, appreciate the question. Thanks to all the friends from the German flock. Appreciate you. And please hang in there and give us some more questions. I'll try and take care of them better. And I apologize for losing your question. I really apologize for mispronouncing your name. If you would send me a DM that has that, and I'll correct myself on another show. We have Spencer Peterson, who's been a guest on this show recently. Done a great job too, by the way. Says, Ken, doesn't Rodgers have to survive the ground rather than the catch process being instantaneously concluded because his knee hits?
I thought we weren't going to talk about this anymore.
I didn't bring it up.
Man, you're absolutely right, Spence. He has to survive the ground. He has to get the catch. He has to maintain possession. Because as we mentioned in the last show, he's not a quarterback at that point. He is a receiver. And if you're going to hold Isaiah Likely to that standard, then you have to hold a guy like Aaron Rodgers to that standard as well. He didn't maintain the catch all the way to the ground. I didn't see a football move of any kind. And I think that pretty much speaks to it. And that's why I'm and Ken as well are so adamant about that. So to your point, yes, he has to survive the ground. And he did not. So it should have been a turnover.
I don't even know. I promised not to talk about it, so I'm not going to respond to that. But I appreciate you doing it, Sam. Thanks. Oh, man. Brett Hammonds has a good question. He says, was the Mark Andrews signing good news for Travis Jones? And this wouldn't be normally a question we might have on Friday morning GM, Brett. Might come up again there. Might have already come up in any number of discussions about that. Did you have a strong feeling about that? Is the fact that they spent money on Mark Andrews, it's probably bad news for Isaiah Likely. I think everybody's agreed on that. But is it good news potentially for Travis Jones somehow?
I think it is. I think the money you would have spent on a guy like Isaiah Likely, you might save maybe a million or two, and maybe that's the difference, you know, in signing a guy like him. You may have to spend more than you would like for Travis Jones. There are going to be people who are going to be throwing some dollars, maybe not legally in the sense that he's not technically a free agent, but his agent will be hearing things, and I'm sure the Ravens need to do their best to make sure he doesn't reach free agency. It'll be one of those things because, boy, if he gets to the open market, he probably is as good as gone because there will be a number of suitors awaiting him. So I think it is good.
It'd be a very competitive market, and I don't doubt that they're trying to get him signed right now, and I also don't doubt that they'll slap the franchise tag on him. I think it's actually less likely now that they'll put the franchise tag on Isaiah Likely having Andrews. I think that they're going to have to figure out a way to draft again at the position. The Ravens let themselves get in a very bad position at the tight end / fullback group. Ricard, yes. They won't have a problem getting Ricard back if he's the way to go. And it seems like, you know, from recent data points, and the most recent data is the most pertinent, by the way, as an illustration, actually going through, and one of the things that is constantly a mantra is recent historical experience has to be what you fall back on. The most recent historical experience for Patrick Hart is, again, very good. And so it looks like, if I had to guess, I'd say he'll be back for another year, and hopefully it won't be a big expensive number. It'll probably be similar to what he earned this year with some veteran VSB money. 100%. And then if you look at the other positions, though, all those tight ends their contracts came due at the wrong time and at the same time, and that's something you need to avoid. And the Ravens need to make sure that does not happen on the offensive line or the defensive line. This has to be a cautionary tale to them. Now, they may have thought that the Isaiah Likely, they could put a franchise tag on them, or they had other options. I didn't see them as having any really good options at the beginning of this year to keep their tight end presence. It was more of an issue, honestly, earlier when the Ravens had been so productive with their tight ends for two consecutive years. They had the 143 passer rating thrown to the tight ends with 30 touchdowns and one interception the last 2 years. Those numbers are like ingrained in my head now. I can't not say them. But, you know, this year it's been an unproductive year for the tight ends. In particular, Mark Andrews has not had a good year in yards per target. He's had a career low. And they've signed the guy who's the worst statistically and the oldest. They've now re-signed. Charlie Kolar, we never got a chance to really figure out who he was here. And I think somebody will want to pay some money and figure that out. And Isaiah Likely, I just think he's shown a little bit too much to not be of interest to other teams. And the Ravens may be in a position where it wasn't, he's not, they don't think he's worth the risk on the franchise tag.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, you know, they didn't really get an opportunity to see him in a predominant role here with Mark Andrews. And it's a franchise tag is a big risk. Now, I think the number is about $15.8 million next year.
Oh, that is big.
Yeah, and if you're paying, you know, Mark Andrews, what, $13 to $14 million a year as well, that's too much money in the position group. So, unfortunately, it does probably signal the end of the Isaiah Likely era in Baltimore.
Yeah. All right. Well, I wish there was a way he could be back, but unfortunately, like one of the ways he could be back, I don't wish upon him, and that would be him getting hurt.
Yeah.
Down the stretch here, a lot of players that happens. They have an injury that might linger into next year. It's the worst way. Isaiah Likely deserves a big bite at the apple this time around, whether that's through free agency or through a contract with the Ravens. And I hope he gets it one way or the other. So where do the Ravens go from here? Obviously, a very disappointing loss. They go to Cincinnati. What do you foresee in terms of this Ravens' ability to pick itself up off the deck after this loss?
I am optimistic. I don't know why I shouldn't be after this loss. I just think that if the Ravens were to win in Cincinnati this week, that everything they want is still ahead of them. They split the Packers or the Patriots. They have to win in Cincinnati. And then mm-hmm. you set yourself up for a Week 18 matchup. The Steelers are not going to win three straight games before that Week 18 matchup. They're just not. They don't have – I think they lose to either the Lions. Well, they will lose to the Lions. And then I think they might Browns. Have a chance to split between Dolphins. The Browns and the yeah. Dolphins. Yeah. It's not over by a long shot. But you would have liked to get this job done in this contest. But if you think the fight's over, I got news for you. It's not. It's just a matter of the Ravens getting things under control. And we'll see if that can actually happen. But there is hope for Ravens fans out there.
Right. Well, I mean, obviously, if they beat Cincinnati, and that's a big if,
yeah.
Then a lot of other options open for the Ravens in terms of winning the division. Because if you haven't followed closely, the head-to-head, the best the Ravens can do is a tie, but they can get that. The division is the scary part. They can lose that to the Steelers now if they lose to Cincinnati. It would be their third divisional loss, and Pittsburgh is still capable of going 4-2 in the division, even if they lose the Ravens. They're 3-1 currently if they beat the Browns. So that would be a very, very bad situation to be in if they were to lose to the Bengals. But if they beat the Bengals, then they not only does it open the door for them to win the division at 10-7, which is always there right now. If they win it automatically, they go 10-7. But it opens up a lot of doors to win at 9-8 and even 8-9. Because they have the third tiebreaker already in the bag versus Pittsburgh. That's common opponents. And they have lost to all three non-common opponents, while Pittsburgh has one win against non-common opponents. It might be two now, which means they've already clinched the third tiebreaker. So as long as they don't lose that division tiebreaker to the Steelers, they still have a shot.
Agreed.
All right. All right, Sam, always a pleasure talking football with you. Great to get a couple hours here and go through this. Makes me feel better. And you're a positive guy. This is good. Tell us about your podcast with Kadri and what you're doing over there.
Yeah, we have the Locked On Ravens Squad Show with myself, Kevin Ostreicher, and former Super Bowl champion Kadri Ismail. We meet twice a week to talk football, once in the middle of the week and once after every Ravens game. We get together, we give our knee-jerk reaction to the contest. You can tell it's very somber sometimes in there, but also a good chance for Ravens fans to come in, you know, express themselves and get it out there, and we talk about the positives and the negatives of each game.
A live show there you guys do?
A live show every twice a week, so 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays, and then immediately following the Ravens game. So the next one would be on Sunday after the Ravens hopefully take care of business against the Bengals.
Yeah, let's hope for that. Let's hope that's a happy show for you guys after that game.
Yes.
Folks out there, really appreciate all your listening. I want to tell you how much I appreciate you as an audience, a group of people who have a tremendous amount of football knowledge that I don't have to take for granted. And we can talk about the game the way we do. Please toss in your questions. And I would love to have some questions to explain in these 1 to 2 minute video shorts You know, anything about why something is on defense, maybe why something is on the offensive line, why player A is getting more time than player B, you know, what the Ravens are thinking when they do something. Some of those questions will go to a show like Friday Morning GM, or they'll be answered in the offensive or defensive pod. Some of them I'll do in a little 1 to 3 minute video short. And I'm trying to lean into that medium a little more. Anyway, really appreciate you. And we'll talk to you soon. Sam, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.